Welcome to episode two of The Makers Make. And today, get your Sunday suit on, because we take you to church to meet a maker by the name of Troy. Now, Troy is the definition of San Francisco: open, intelligent, and a maker through and through. The founder of a startup church. I don't know about you, but that calls for coffee and an interview. So we head over to Sight Glass Coffee House for exactly that. Don't mind the quality, kind of rubbish, but man, the content. Well, hear for yourself.
I think this is a great thing about doing your own thing. You're saying that you're basically leading a startup church. There's a lot left to be imagined, because it doesn't exist pretty much anywhere else. So what does that exactly mean? I mean, I'd like to understand, you know, conceptually what that means, but also what does that mean directly?
I think the thing for us is we're trying to just make it real simple, is we're trying to build a community of people. We understand, like, a startup normally has a product, and we don't have a product. So we're already sort of at a deficit for people to understand what is it that we're creating. So we don't have a product, but we think in terms of people. So I think it, you know, let's build a community together where we're investing not just in people, but these people begin to invest in each other. And that's such a learning process, because it's not formulaic, it's not methodical, it's more organic.
Yeah.
In terms of everybody has a story, and everybody has different needs.
Okay, I can dig that. But why exactly is this a startup? What about it makes it a startup?
I think all churches have had some origin where they got started, right? So in a sense, a lot of churches have been startups, and then they got started. However, a lot of them that got started with a couple hundred people.
How many people you got started with?
Just me.
Just me. One man creating a church out of thin air. That's not very easy to do, and also not very typical of how churches are founded or created or spread. I don't know the right terminology to use in this case.
Masters of Divinity, I wanted to park my credentials in a denomination that was recognizable. I wasn't a church guy that was saying, hey, I want to start a new denomination, or I want to be non-denominational. I actually wanted to be in a denomination that I felt like was creedal, like their creed and like even their theology, you know, went back several centuries. What I valued, though, was I wanted the practice of it to be more relevant. I wanted freedom to be able to practice it in such a way that made sense to where we lived. So in terms of a startup, yes, it's a startup. However, we do have a supportive connection that's helping us do what we do.
So in more practical terms, I have to ask the question, what did you do to get to do what you do?
I started this 501c3 nonprofit fund called The Table, SF. So it's a nonprofit. Donors, both churches around the country and individuals around the country, and people internally who are now a part of our organization, are actually contributing money to the organization, to the church. I'm a paid staff person that keeps things going forward. So it's a dream. I'm getting to do what I'm getting to do right now, because typical to a startup, I've raised a lot of funds to do what I'm doing, to be able to do what I'm doing.
precisely that. Makers, be men and women of action. Be about that action. Now, to understand the Table SF, to understand Troy, to understand making, we must go to the origin story of his church. Why make it? When did the idea start?
Inviting them into this process that we don't even know where to go.
Do you say, so when did that process start? How long ago did it start?
We moved here about 3.5 years ago. About 3.5 years ago.
And did the startup idea start here?
The startup idea was long ago. Startup idea was long ago. I didn't know where and I didn't know what city, and I really couldn't see all the granular details. But I knew I wanted it, and I knew I wanted to live in a secular, postmodern, multicultural, polytheistic culture.
San Francisco's perfect.
And San Francisco kind of fits that.
Yeah. Fits them all. It does.
So I guess getting here, just starting to meet people, inviting people over to our little condo that we have, and just throwing parties. Parties meaning, hey, we're gonna cook up some food, and I know you eat because we all do,
yeah.
And I know you talk because we all do, and I know you have ideas and passions and needs and limitations, not just gifts and abilities, but you have weaknesses too. We all do. So let's come over this evening and have a meal together. You know, there's a couple people at that, and then there's, you know, 6 people at that, and there's 8 people at that, and then there's 50 people at that, and then somewhere in that process, someone was like, this is, I'm starting to see some of these same people again. I'm starting to become friends with some of these people I never imagined becoming friends with, and they're a different age than I am, or they're a different race than I am, or you know, they grew up in a different part of the world than I did, and what are we going to call this? So I think at that point I was letting people know, well, hey, you know, I'm here to start church. What I mean by that is a worshiping community, not just a church community that worships on a Sunday, and then that's pretty much it. We don't see each other until next Sunday, and then we put on our best clothes and we sing as loud as we can, and we listen to somebody yell at us or whatever, and feel guilty all week. I'm talking about a group of people that are inclusive. I'm talking about a group of people that's a collective of people that's on a journey. Some people are Jesus following, Jesus loving, believing, worshiping in that way. And then others that are just kind of curious. And others that are just like, frankly, here just for the community part.
Yeah.
They like the food.
And there's nothing wrong with it.
Not at all. That was my perspective. Not at all. So just sort of wanted to let all you know that that's where I'm coming from. That's what I'm trying to do, establish, invite you into that process.
Makers, let us delve deeper into this topic of authenticity, because it's such a beautiful lesson. See, to understand it, maybe best to define it. According to Merriam-Webster, authenticity has a few definitions. One, worthy of acceptance or belief as conforming to or based on fact. Two, not false or imitation, real, actual. Three, true to one's own personality, spirit, or character. Is sincere and authentic with no pretensions. See, makers like Troy and the makers that came before you and will surely come after. Be real.
I think why that is an apt description of what we're trying to set up is the fact that when you look at the difference between startup and corporate often has the stigma of static, meaning it rarely progresses. So in what you're telling me from this belief, from the below, and from the, what was the last one?
Blessing.
Yes, exactly. And from the blessing, it seems that these three pillars stand as framework for an adapted situation that consistently ebbs and flows. So essentially, if you go to church, you go to a community each day, you're learning so much from people who may not have the same belief structure as you.
Exactly.
But they're there because of how upfront that second pillar is, the belief. The people who are there believe in God. Some people are just curious. It doesn't matter if you're agnostic. It does not matter if you're Christian. It does not matter if you're Buddhist. What matters is if you have this idea, this openness, this blessing, this thing you want to share with people, and you want to do it in an open way, and you want to be able to have that openness reciprocated. And I think that's a very rare trait you find in the church, because a lot of groups that we join it because the people who are in it are
like us.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And now you're flipping that on its head.
We are. And the reason why we're flipping it on its head is we're saying, even inside myself as the startup person, or even inside this community that's being built, there are certain days where you even find your own belief and your belief system challenged. And so we're just trying to acknowledge we all have questions, and questions are valid, questions are championed, and questions are congratulated. We congratulate people when they finally start asking questions. They're like, great, you're thinking.
Yeah.
You're actually feeling, you're being honest.
But here's the issue there. I find it really, sorry, but I just find it really interesting that one of the biggest credos in the Christian faith is faith, right? It is this idea that at some point you just have to believe that you don't really, maybe I'm taking it to another step, but there's this idea that you just stop, the more questions you ask to a certain point, the less you have faith. And a man of faith is a man who just believes. And to me, questions, those really difficult questions, it doesn't seem they're prized in a traditional sense. More so, this blind faith that we step back into as the answer to all these questions, all these problems that we have in our society, is not directly answered by the Bible or the Christian belief system.
We're saying that, you know, there have been church movements and historical Christianity that's been very anti-intellectual, and that is not who we are at all. We're saying, bring your thinking, bring your feeling, bring all of who you are, everything that you're going through, bring your wish list, bring your worry list, bring everything that you're going through right now into this experience and into this community, and believe, and have faith. We're not saying that faith causes us to turn off our thinking. We feel like faith enhances our thinking. We feel like our thinking enhances our faith. We feel like it's very adaptive and all. It's like systems theory. It's literally all connected.
It's all connected. So, let's connect the dots and bring it back to what is the core of the Makers Make: dreaming, creating, executing.
The question was, how did you take this idea? Basically, what made you make it? What made you make it? What drives you to continually keep doing this? More importantly, how did you, because I remember I break down making, I don't know if this is correct to you, into a dream. You had this dream of the startup church that wrestled with ambiguous ideas and felt it was okay to have a platform for inquiries. Two, you know about creating this. How do I create this? What did you do what were the steps necessary that you took to create this? And then finally, execute. How did you take what you've created and execute on what you've created? How do you take this from one person joining your church to 10, to 15, to 30, to 40?
I feel like I personally, you know, like my story goes back to a dad who's blue collar, he's a heavy equipment crane operator, So it's just seeing this man with an incredible work ethic and drive and honesty and faithfulness to my mom and my family. And I think I just learned so much about drive and passion and energy. And even when you don't feel like it sometimes, you move forward. You know what I'm saying? There's definitely certain people that literally cannot work. I get that, and I'm really sorry for that. But for a lot of us, we can work. And I really just saw that model through a person like that. And I'm super grateful. My dad taught my brother and I how to work. And I remember going and like detailing these cars in the neighborhood, right? Like just literally knocking on somebody's door, and it was awkward, and somebody looked at you like you were crazy, right? But somewhere in that failure, failure wasn't final with my dad. It's not with me. Failure is a learning. Failure is an adaptive moment. And I think my mother was so different than my dad. She was very extroverted. She had like a gift of hospitality. She like would just invite strangers in, and like literally everybody had a place. And literally everybody could just be themselves around my mother. It wasn't stuff she was doing; it's who she was. She was just being, and everybody knew that. So she constantly had like a little crowd around her. Why? Because I think we not only want to do something great, but I think we want to know that someone thinks we're great. And that's what my mother did. Is she told us we were great. She made us believe that we were somebody that had something to offer. So while my dad was instilling work ethic, and hey, go get it, go after it. I think my mother was not just for my brother and myself, but like our backyard literally was a place where all of our friends came to hang out. Gay, straight, black, white, like it didn't matter. What mattered is, hey, we all got here, and how did we get here? Well, we got here because we all feel loved. We all feel accepted. We all feel like somebody thinks we're great. So that feels good.
It's numb. It's hard, though.
So what I'm saying is the context then for me to fail, see, it was okay. My mother helped create that culture where failing was okay. Because my whole identity wasn't like, oh, God, I'm such a bad person, or I'll just quit, or no. And I happen to have a high work ethic, and I'm a very disciplined person, but I'm just saying for people who maybe don't have that, as long as you're in a context around coaches or people or family or community where people are just saying, look, you are loved. You're not alone. You are made for something great. We're going to get there. That is, that's actually more powerful than having the work ethic and drive. I think the two are like an incredible, powerful combo when you have those two kind of in place. But I think if you had to choose one or the other, I think I'd fall back on knowing that I'm loved and that it's not going to be over if I fail.
That's exciting. Because can you imagine
you know what I mean?
Like the Makers Make being that year where people feel loved, or more so feel,
right,
have someone say, you are good.
I believe in you.
Right, exactly.
And I believe in you not because you've impressed me with where you grew up, what you graduated from, what your GPA was. I believe in you because I believe that there's a story inside of you. And this is what my mother taught me. She said, everybody's story is valid and unique. And then that was powerful. And the second thing she said is, don't assume you know it. Don't assume you know their story.
It's true.
Man. Don't look at somebody there or right here and think you know anything about yourself. Do the harder work and ask the questions. So yeah, what if your organization brought together a collective of people that, and maybe you get a bunch of doers and people that are just driven and ambitious, but they've kind of been lacking in, you know, being nurtured or being told, like what you do is not who you are.
And when it's time to close the shop, I used to get, obviously I'm very different, I used to get angry, almost felt it beneath me to, you know, clean all the, you know, the gunk from the whole day. And then eventually my dad just told me, look, do you think I enjoy doing it? He does tax, right? Do you think I enjoy doing what I do? Not necessarily, but I'm doing this to provide. So to him, what he did wasn't who he was. And then as I've grown older, I've been wondering, is that the way to think? Because I actually did some research into this. I looked into Pew studies, I looked into the Department of Labor statistics to understand what people do outside of it. Because we spend 8 hours a day working. Let's say fine, you don't like working. But oftentimes what people do outside of work is to recover. They watch TV. They
exercise.
All these things that look great, but if you pair them with the 8 hours you spend at work, the 8 hours or so you spend sleeping, and the 3 or 4 hours you spend recovering from work, when do you get time to be who you are? And I think that's the problem with it. I think this fallacy of what you do should only be a means for who you are, when it should be who you are is what you do.
I love it.
Period.
I love it.
Right? And I think that's a hard thing to get people to understand.
Sign me up for that one. I like the way you just said that.
Yeah.
Now, before we sign up Troy to Makers Make, I'm pretty sure he's already a member, we need to close it off strong, finish off with a question that captures everything we've talked about. So, let's go into it.
So then, I guess the final, the most important question that encompasses everything we talked about is, if you could drill it down, and it's gonna be hard, you could drill it down to what makes a maker, and advice to people who want to make or create or dream, what would that be? Is it for you, is it find a community? Or is there something else that you should focus on if you want to? And this is from your own experiences. What would that thing, what would that advice be?
I think everyone is a maker because we've been made. I don't think anyone made themselves. And so makers are gonna make because makers have been made. That's what I think. And to me, yeah, definitely not everybody's gonna invent Apple or invent these things, of course, I get that. And so yeah, there are different levels of makers, of course. But I would say I believe that all of us have something to contribute. I think we all are makers because we've been made. And I think the hard part is getting that self-reflection time, creating space in your own rhythm of life, your own work-life balance, to either journal, think out loud, write, talk to a friend, but search deep down in there for what has already been placed in there.
What is it that you need to show the world?
Exactly.
What is it that you need to show?
Exactly. And I doubt that you gotta go make that. I'm more confident that it's already in there and you gotta find it. Kind of like joy or kind of like happiness or kind of like peace. It's not an add-on, it's not an attachment that we just gotta hold on, or it's in there. Are you and I, are we taking, are we inviting others into space? Are we giving people space to find that?
Thank you. on, the lights are turning on, a silver shine that stretches to the sea. We stumble on a view that's tailor-made for two. What a shame those two are you and me. We made it. What a beautiful feeling that is. We made it together. Huge thanks to Troy for lending me 2 hours of the week for an interview. Incredible mind, sharp wit, and doer in every sense of the word. Big thanks again, brother. To check out more from Troy, go to www.thetablesf.com. That's thetablesf.com for more information about his mission, his church, his startup, and what exactly he's doing to change the San Francisco community. Very cool stuff. And for more of The Makers Make, go to www.themakersmake.com. You can scroll by the Makers page too to check out all the prior makers and see if anyone's story speaks to you. Hopefully. And if you're a maker who would like to be showcased, just go through the contact me section or email me at will@themakersmake.com. And as always, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or hey, just tell a friend about us. Until next time, makers keep making.